So who are the Black Hebrew Israelites?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown back from a lovely time of ministry in Silicon Valley in California yesterday. Well, no, yesterday is Monday. That's my travel day. Sunday in Silicon Valley, we stayed right across from the giant Tesla factory and not far from Google and Facebook headquarters and all that. But God's moving even in the midst of that part of the country. Great to be with you. Here's the number to call. And the phone lines are open right now for any question of any kind, on any subject, related on any level in any way to the Line of Fire broadcast. 866-348-7884. 866-34-TRUTH. And then, at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be joined by Vocab Malone to talk more about the Black Hebrew Israelites. Who they are, what they're about, where they come from, how they can be reached with the gospel. Also, about an hour and 10 minutes from now, we're going to continue on YouTube. Those watching on YouTube, Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown on YouTube, we are going to do our weekly YouTube chat. So that's for those that either can't call in or it's just a good opportunity for you. Just type in your questions and we respond to as many as we can. So that's going to be those watching on YouTube at Ask Dr. Brown, starting about 4:15 Eastern Standard. I woke up today and didn't even realize, it didn't dawn on me that it was December 17th, but that's a very important day in my life. 48 years ago today. Wow. Amazing. Getting close to 50. 48 years ago today, at the age of 16, after God had dealt with me and put me under deep conviction of sin for weeks, my friends had shared the gospel with me, these folks in the little Italian Pentecostal church that I was attending at that time had been praying for me. And I was one day shooting heroin, the next day in church, and back and forth, and God was dealing with me. I got so overcome by the joy of the Lord, singing these little hymns. Remember, I was a rock drummer. Remember, and those watching, there's a picture of me shortly after I was saved. Yeah, as far as we can tell, we think it's shortly after I was saved because it appears I'm holding a little New Testament in my hand. So those watching, we posted this on Twitter and on Facebook, but we just put it up during the show now as well for those who are watching. But I remember I was a rock drummer. Remember, I went to rock concerts all the time. So if I wasn't practicing with my band and we were playing as loud as we could in the little room in our house, my house, my parents' house, if I wasn't doing that, I was at rock concerts, from Jimi Hendrix to Led Zeppelin to Grateful Dead to Jethro Tull to The Who, the famous bands of the day. And here I am in this little Pentecostal church with maybe 50 people there and pastor's wife playing piano, and we're singing hymns. You know, Blessed Assurance, Jesus is mine. There's within my heart a melody. You know, just these little hymns. I got so overcome with the joy of the Lord that I recognized this is different. This is different than a drug high. This is different than a music high. This is different than a friendship high. This is different. This is of a different quality. This must be what they call the joy of the Lord. Yeah. And when I experienced that, I instantly got a revelation of the love of God. I realized how sinful I had been, how corrupt I had been, how ungrateful I had been. Because 5 weeks earlier, for the first time, I had believed, November 12th of 71, for the first time, I had believed that Jesus died for my sins. For the first time ever, I believed that. But I wasn't willing to live for him. I wasn't willing to serve the Lord in any way. So that's why I was wrestling back and forth, go to church one day, getting high the next. And here, overcome by God's love and goodness, I just had this clear mental picture that I was covered in filth and mud. and that the Lord washed me from head to toe. And I was put in these beautiful white robes, and I was going back and playing in the mud. And I said, that's it. I will never put a needle in my arm again. And I was free from that moment on. And that's what happened 48 years ago today, 1971. The goodness of God, the grace of God, his faithfulness, his keeping power. And, you know, it was August 24th of 2014 that I recognized I had to make a change in my lifestyle in terms of food. And it was much harder for me to give up chocolate and the other unhealthy things I was eating. It was much harder for me to give that up than to give up heroin and other drugs back in 1971. Yeah, the stronghold of food. And I appealed to the Lord the third day of going cold turkey, withdrawal from all the unhealthy foods. I basically had no withdrawal from drugs. God just set me free. And now I'm going through withdrawal from foods. And I cried out and I said, surely, Lord, the same power that set me free from drugs can set me free from food addiction. And God's grace intervened there. So that's 48 years for the one, 5.5 years for the other. But I'm grateful to God. 866-348-7884. I will take some calls. I want to talk to you about the interview that we did with General Butt Naked, the man formerly known as General Butt Naked, now Pastor Joshua. Some have been scandalized by the idea of him being forgiven. I mean, after all, he was not just a warlord that was involved with killing many in the midst of war within Liberia, civil war. He was also involved in atrocities. He was trained in witchcraft as a boy, became the chief witch of his tribe at the age of 11, and said that he practiced human sacrifice and would sacrifice children. You say, well, first, how could God forgive him? That's one. And two, how could he not be in jail or put to death for what he did? Now, if you listen to the whole interview, you heard the answers to those things. Number one, God forgives sinners. God forgave all kinds of sinners in the past. David Berkowitz, the notorious Son of Sam serial killer, who will spend the rest of his life in jail. And when probation would come up years past, he would write to the governor or write to probation, say, I don't deserve to be freed because of what I did. But God saved him. Beautiful, humble, Jesus-loving man. It's remarkable to hear his testimony. So what about former General Butt Naked, a man guilty of atrocities, now serving the Lord? Well, first, he met many of the people whose families he was involved with killing, or killing individuals within the family. And just in the culture, they could have killed him. And he would met and kneel down in front of them. If you want to kill me, kill me. And then offer them hope through the gospel. So they could have killed him, and they didn't. He presented himself to the Truth and Reconciliation Council in his country. As I understand it, of the various warlords, he was the first one to come forward. He was the first one to come forward and to say, I'm sorry for the terrible things that I did, and presented himself. Because remember, you've got a war-torn country. You've got atrocities taking place on every side. So he comes and humbles himself. They could have done something or say, you must be turned over to the authorities, but felt that what he was now doing in terms of going about doing good and helping undo the damage that he had done, and ministering to the very children that they recruited for their armies and put on drugs and things like that, that taking them in and caring for them and bringing them to Jesus was far better work, and going and making amends and apologizing. Now, some of these crimes and issues are going to come to an international court in The Hague, and he will be subject to what they say. So he's not run from the law. He's actually run to it. But let me ask you a question. Saul of Tarsus was responsible for the death of followers of Jesus. Was he put to death? No. Did he go to jail for it? No. Moses killed an Egyptian. Did he go to jail for it? No. David had Uriah killed. Did he go to jail? No. Now, God dealt with them. There were penalties, a penalty for what David did as a man of God. But what Moses did, that was prior to his spiritual awakening, the same with Saul. The same with this man. So there are certain settings where you better believe you're going to do the time. you better believe you're going to go to jail or you may get the death penalty for what you did. There are other settings where it won't work out like that, and that is the case of what happened in Liberia. So if you missed the interview yesterday, we recorded it with Pastor Joshua from Liberia, and a dear friend of mine, one of our grads from our ministry school, who's been doing different work on the mission field for years, has gotten to know Joshua very well, works side by side with him, and he's the one that suggested we do the interview because he knows him well. So praise God for his goodness and grace. He can save the worst of sinners. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Marianne in Florida. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
I saw you in Jacksonville recently.
Great, great. At Celebration Church, yeah.
Yeah, it was wonderful. I'd like to know what I can call myself. I'm 85 years old now, and I don't know what I am, okay? I became a born-again Christian over 40 years ago, and in the past 15 to 20 years have been drawing near to the whole Bible and the Messianic teachings. And I go to a community get-together for Messianic teachings and for the Torah. So I don't know what to call myself. I'm not a Christian in the old sense because they leave out the Torah and they think that I'm into works, and that's that. And I'm not a Messianic Jew, and I'm not a Nazarene. What do I call myself?
Follower of Jesus.
Amen. Is that it?
A follower of Jesus. It works for me, too. And if you want to underscore the fact that he's the Jewish Messiah, you can say I'm a follower of Yeshua. And, you know, so you're not claiming to be Jewish. You're not claiming to find your identity in observance of the Torah and I'm becoming more righteous because I observe the Torah. You're not saying that. You simply find value in all of God's word. So either I'm a Jesus follower or I'm a follower of Yeshua. Either of those will work. Speaking of that, we come back. So God bless you, Marianne, 85 and still on a journey. I love it. Fellow follower of Jesus, Yeshua. We come back. I'm going to go straight to your calls. And also want to let you know about our Consider This episode, our latest one. If you missed it, is God a Zionist? Talk about a relevant message now. Yes, is God a Zionist? We'll be right back.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. So, bottom of the hour, I'm going to be joined by Vocab Malone, talking about the Black Hebrew Israelites involved with the Jersey City shooting in the kosher grocery market recently, and ever increasingly in the news, we need to expose the darkness of this cult and show them the light of Messiah, Jesus, Yeshua. Many are leaving, but many more need to hear the truth. So we'll be doing that. And then about an hour from now, doing a YouTube chat so you can catch us with your questions. If you don't get them answered now, if we don't have time to get your calls, we'll be doing it during the chat. So our latest episode, Consider This, episode number 9. These are highly professional videos. Our team puts a ton of time, effort, energy into them, animated videos. And we answer the question here, is God a Zionist? With scriptural logic, with historical truth, it is a great 5-minute piece. Share it widely. You can see it on our YouTube channel, Ask Dr. Brown, or right on our homepage, askdrbrown.org/consider this. You can look at all 9. If you missed any of them, watch them all. Share them with your friends. I mean, what an education in just 5 minutes. And so captivating, so well produced, put together, that you'll want to show them to your entire congregation. All right, back to the phones. We go to Larry in Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you for taking my call, Michael Brown. I have a question from 1 Kings 22:22, where all the host of heaven is before the Lord, and he's going to send a lying spirit to Ahab's prophets. My question is, this lying spirit, is it a real angel, or is it a demon? Are demons in the host of heaven?
Yes, yeah, so those are the only two choices, right? That it's either an angel in obedience to God, who will then go out as a lying spirit and give a false message, right? You right. say, how could that be? That would be mixing light with darkness. That's right. A great point. So when the whole host of heaven is gathered before the Lord, remember in Job 1, Satan himself appears with the angels before God. And this could also be the state of things before the cross, before the resurrection. There may have been a change since then. You know, that's debatable. But in my view, God, being God, has the power at any time to call all angelic and demonic creatures before him. And demons are going to do what demons do. Liars are going to do what liars do. It's their nature. So this could well be a demonic spirit that said, I'll go out and be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. God said, great, you'll succeed. Go ahead and do it. So this is God using the enemy to do the enemy's work, God using Satan to do Satan's work. If you look in 2 Samuel 24:1, you see the anger of the Lord incited David to number Israel. When you read 1 Chronicles 21:1, which is written several hundred years later and takes us further back into the spiritual realm, it says that Satan incited David to number Israel. So obviously God, being angry with David, gave the enemy an open door to attack or to incite David, and David acted on it and was judged accordingly. So while it could be an angel giving a false message, in other words, you don't want to hear the truth, here's a false message, the principle seems more to be 2 Thessalonians 2, because you reject the truth, God's going to pour out a spirit of delusion on you. So a spirit of delusion, I look at as more satanic. So my opinion, it's more likely a demonic spirit than an angel.
Okay. It had my head spinning because I'm getting ready to do a DVD series on a well-known speaker and author, and he's saying in this first session that, you know, angels are sent on missions, and he's making it out that this is an angel sent out on a mission.
Yeah, I mean, it's a logical way to look at it, because you think the host of heaven, that's going to be God's angels, right? And
right.
that one, you know, who's got a plan? It's like, hey, I'm just going to go give them the false information. Yeah, okay, go ahead and do that. But would God use an angel of light to send out a false message? You could say, well, if God's giving you over to deception, yes. In other words, you've rejected the truth. You want to hear a false message. God's going to say, okay, go ahead. You want to hear a false message? Go ahead. Just like a parent telling the kid, okay, go ahead. You know, you think this won't work. Go ahead, do it. You know it's not going to work, but go ahead, do it. But to me, you could make a good case either way, honestly, and scholars do argue it back and forth. So think it through. But I think you can make a good case for it being demonic. Thank you. Hey, just want to put this poll up. I asked this question on Twitter and on Facebook. Twitter, I can give three choices. Facebook, two. What do you think? Is America on the edge of a great awakening or a deep cultural collapse? Or perhaps no major shift in either direction? Awakening, 35%. We had 1,052 votes. Collapse, 51%. No major shift, 13%. Interesting. When asked the same question on Facebook, and we got, how many votes there? 2,300. 48% said Great Awakening. I only give two choices on Facebook. 52% cultural collapse. It's interesting that it's that divided. Are things about to totally collapse or Great Awakening, or maybe both? Maybe both, right? That's a fair question to ask. Could be. Let's go to Connor in Spokane, Washington. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Mike.
Hello.
Do you think that Jesus cleansed the temple twice based off the timelines and John and the synoptics not lining up? Or do you think that it was the same event, just recorded differently?
Probably
at different times.
Yeah. Probably the same event which John moves up to the beginning for purposes in his narrative. We know the gospel authors do that. It's not always in chronological order, largely, but not always. But honestly, I'm not sure. I just talked to a friend of mine who's a scholar of the book of John, and his opinion is that it's the same event, and it's just put in an earlier time. You would have thought it might have gotten the attention of the other gospel authors if it was a different event, if it happened twice. But I don't know that we can know for sure. It's just a matter of opinion, to be honest. So I'm honestly not sure. I'm certainly not dogmatic about it. But because sure. John does not record the latter cleansing, I would think it's the same event, which he moves up chronologically to make a strong point early in his gospel.
Yeah, I agree. I think part of the attempt to make it two separate events is those who are worried about it seeming like a contradiction, making it out to be twice. But I had a discussion with a brother of mine, and he went the other way and I went this way, and I was just curious your take on it.
Yeah, look, the other thing is that when you see the strategic nature of the Gospels, how, for example, Matthew places the event of the healing of a man with a crippled arm and the plucking of grain in the grain fields both on the Sabbath. It's Matthew 12, which immediately follows the end of Matthew 11, "Come to me, all you who are heavy laden and burdened, I'll give you rest." So Matthew alone has that teaching on the lips of Jesus and then has this account follow immediately. So there's the contrast between the rest that you get in his kingdom yoke versus the traditions of man. So it's fully understood that while the Gospels are largely chronological, many times you say, okay, why does this author have this event here and that event there, or put this teaching here and that event there? It's for strategic purposes to convey a larger message, and it was not thought of, as being chronological throughout. 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, Ted in Ohio, stay there, and we'll get to some Black Hebrew Israelite questions with Vocab Malone. So if you can hold, that would be great. Shirley in Chicago, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. How are you? This is Sister Cherry. I spoke with you on Debate Talk to You. I'm the young lady that asked you about the Christian name.
Okay, great.
Yes,
I remember.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to speak to you again. And if my brother Vocab is there, God bless you, dear brother. I'm calling to ask a question, maybe somewhat of a statement. I'm not sure if Vocab touched on this, but we're noticing regarding the Black Hebrew Israelites are literally using a replacement theology of identity. Replacing identity with the gospel. We know that the gospel is the death, burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. But we constantly see that they are finding it more important to identify with, Israel alone over Jesus Christ. Could you explain, not just to me, but to the audience, of how dangerous that may be, or if it's not dangerous, could you explain why? And I was having a question about 2 Corinthians 3:14, that these are people who are blind when Moses is read. Could you?
Absolutely. Sure thing. So in 2 Corinthians 3:14, Paul talks about Jewish people reading the Old Covenant, so the Sinai Covenant, not talking about the Old Testament books as a whole, that concept wasn't called Old Testament, but reading the Sinai Covenant, that there's a veil, that they don't see the light of the Messiah in it. And when they turn to the Lord, though, then the veil is removed. So Black Hebrew Israelites, and we're about to talk to Vocab momentarily, put their identity, a false identity, in claiming to be the true Israelites, and then in having a law emphasis of obedience and sanctification through the law, and very little revelation of who Jesus is or what new birth in him is. The whole New Testament emphasizes being in him, in him, in him, in him, in him. And Jesus says in John 15:7, "If you remain in me, my words in you, ask what you will and it'll be done." Our identity is found in being in Messiah, not in being black or white or Jew or Gentile or male or female. being in him. Outside of him, we have no life. No life. Hey, thank you for the call. We'll be right back with Vocab Malone.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
To burn up every trace of sin, to bring the light and glory in the revolution.
And was walking on the street on a Saturday and heard this group with a loud amplification system. The guys looked like they were wearing outfits kind of halfway in between Star Wars and some angelic garb or something, and preaching. And anyway, I realized who they were. I'd heard a little bit about Black Hebrew Israelites and confronted them about the message of hate and told them that Jesus preached a religion of love and that black man and Jewish man, we needed each other and so on. Anyway, I failed to calculate I was the only white man in the crowd there, and they started chanting death to the white man, death to America. But I did share the gospel with them as best I could without having the mic in that context. Recently had a confrontation with them, Charlotte, North Carolina, near where I live now, just a few months back. They are getting more and more in the news. They have been active in the inner cities for years. They are, you may have seen clips of some of their hatred and anger with the high school kids, the Catholic high school kids a few months ago, and now heard about their the link to the shooting in Jersey City. We've had some guests on in the past, some specialists to talk about this, but I thought it'd be great to revisit this. And we've asked Vocab Malone to join us. Vocab's ministry focuses urban contextualized apologetics and engaging audiences through social media. And he's the author of Barack Obama versus the Black Hebrew Israelites, Introduction to the History and Beliefs of One West Hebrew Israelism, and contributing author to Our God is Triune and other works. So, Vocab, we ran into each other, just a few weeks back in San Diego. Great to have you on the air with us.
Thanks for having me on, Dr. Brown. How you doing?
Doing well, man. So, Vocab, how long have you been interested in the Black Hebrew Israelites?
A friend first told me about them about 10 years ago. In the past 4 years, I've been focusing on them as a specific area of apologetic research.
And how influential have they been in some of our inner cities and in some of the African-American and Hispanic communities?
Hebrew Israelism is becoming the new number one primary urban apologetic issue. It's, I think, displacing the Nation of Islam as the top contender for an alternative urban spirituality. But it's not just in the inner cities. The internet creates a situation where now folks in rural areas, you know what I'm saying? Corners of very small cities that are popping up all over, and in the UK and in the islands and even in Africa.
All right, so before we talk about origins, history, what's the appeal? I mean, if I'm just walking by as a bystander, I hear some people that seem very angry, yelling, and I don't hear much about hope and redemption and love, but obviously they have appeal, they're growing. In your view, what's their appeal?
Let me be sympathetic and play the role of a Hebrew Israelite.
Yeah.
We're angry? Of course we're angry. Look at what this country has done to our people for the past 400 years. We're angry? Of course we're angry. We're shot dead in the streets and there's no recompense. You think this country can just get away with that? You're angry? Of course you're angry. These politicians, they don't do anything. The church rips us off, doesn't teach us anything. It's just a game. It's just a show. They don't even teach us the Bible in there. Of course we're angry. And you know what? The prophets of old were angry. You think they put Jeremiah in a pit because he was such a nice guy? You think they tried to kill Paul because he was all smiles and flowers? Of course we're angry. Men of the Lord are always angry at injustice. Now, why aren't you angry? Maybe you're not a man of the Lord.
Well said. Well done. So they're appealing to that. Isn't that a parallel then with Nation of Islam on some level?
To an extent, but here's why they're going to displace the Nation of Islam. It's exotic, the Nation of Islam. What I mean by that is this. All of a sudden, you're from the lost tribe of Shabazz. You got to start learning Arabic phrases. The guy who founded it is not even black, you know, Fard. all the main leaders are light-skinned guys. You know what I'm saying? From from Muhammad and Elijah Muhammad to Malcolm X to Farrakhan and everybody else in between. It's very exotic. This, Hebrew Israelism, this ideology, it's a small step. All you do is say, you know that book that we cherish so much? Guess what? We're the star of the story in that book. You need to read the same book, but read it through new and improved lenses. So there's a similarity, but the differences are significant, and I think they'll play into the growth and popularity of Hebrew Israelism in the years to come.
And do we have any idea of their size, how many congregations they have,
yes,
things like that?
Okay, so there's different types and stripes of Hebrew Israelites, like everybody knows. There's on one end of the spectrum, essentially, what are black Jews. And maybe they still at the same time hold to a Hebrew Israelite identity. Then way over here on the other end of the spectrum is what's called One West Hebrew Israelites. There's the so-called radical. The man David Anderson was affiliated with One West variety of Hebrew Israelism. Think of it similar to Salafi Islam. Then within that, there's multiple camps. That's a common name for these groups, camps. They usually don't say group. They usually don't say camps. Some of them will say church, but camp is the favorite term. Now within that, we've been doing our own type of speculations and all this, but it appears our speculations were way, way off. And what I mean by that is extremely underestimated. And here's why I say that, and this is the answer to the question. Lifeway Research earlier this year just did an extensive analysis when they did a survey of black Americans' views of Jews in Israel. And within that, they asked questions about Hebrew Israelism. And the data says 4% of all black Americans self-identify as a Hebrew Israelite. That equals, depending on which demographic you choose, about 1.8 million Americans say they're a Hebrew Israelite. Not only that, almost 20% said they're sympathetic or agree with most of the doctrine. So it's way, way broader ideology, if those numbers have anything to them. And Lifeway usually does good research. Lifeway does good research. And an article just came out by Razul Berry in Christianity Today called Knocking on My Jewish Neighbor's Door, that's kind of a companion piece to that research. And he has a very interesting perspective, being a black man living in Brooklyn right next to his city community. So that's an extensive acceptance of this ideology.
Mm. All right. So before we get to, obviously, the apologetic answer and what God is doing and how best to reach black Hebrew Israelites, let's talk about origins. You mentioned black Jews. There are certainly black Jews. I have friends who are black Jews who are believers in Yeshua the Messiah. And then we know about black Jewish communities. We know about Ethiopian Jews. We know about the Lemba tribe in Zimbabwe and different groups in Nigeria. So do black Hebrew Israelites actually go back to black Israelites legitimately in past history?
Most modern-day Hebrew Israelites of the current strand, especially of the One West variety, don't think the Ethiopians are legitimate, but on the non-One Westers do. So there's great divergence in that. Some think all the Igbo and all the Ashanti are. Of course, from what I understand, the only one that has definitive DNA evidence and other factors as well is the Lemba. But the Lemba are not on the west coast of Africa, so they're really irrelevant to the equivalency thesis. The equivalency thesis, what I've called it, is that basically if you came over to the Western Hemisphere on a ship, then you're actually an Israelite. That's the essence of it. So it's irrelevant. Here, they try to line themselves up with those previous movements, but it's very ambiguous because there's also an anti-African strand in a lot of One West Hebrew Israelism especially. And what that means is they say those were Hamites. They sold us, Shemites, into slavery. And part of the reason they did it is because they're not even our brothers. So some of the One West style Hebrews like to believe that they're going to enslave Africans in the kingdom. Now, remember, this is not all Hebrews lights, but the Covington kids situation in January, as well as the David Anderson Jersey City, those are all One West style Hebrews lights. So those are kind of the guys making the news, basically. So yes and no. I could tell you more about their history specifically if you want.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the history. We've talked about it some on the air, but it's been some years now, and you've been focused on it in your studies. So how does this begin as a sect in America?
The best way to understand it is to go back to the year 1919. Now, there had been some movement before in which some pastors were saying this. Hey, you know those songs we've been singing, those spirituals? You know how we called Harriet Tubman Moses? That's not figurative, folks. That's literal. We are the Israelites. There had been some movement before, right after Reconstruction, in the 1880s and 1890s. But it wasn't until 1919 that you see something come about in Harlem called the Commandment Keepers. The Commandment Keepers essentially practiced a form of Black Judaism. But they kind of wanted it both ways. They basically said, yeah, these Jews over here are fake, but then they would still kind of sometimes work with them, sometimes copy some of their ceremonies, things like that. So it was a real strange relationship. Well, eventually, some members became unhappy with that. And they also said, you know, maybe we should reconsider the New Testament. And so they brought the New Testament into their teachings and eventually left the Commandment Keepers. So after 1919, you had 50 years, you get 1969. That's the official beginning of what we call One West Hebrew Israelism. And it was began by a man named Abba Bivens. And Abba Bivens had students, and one of the main students was Ariyah. He is still alive. He's an older man, and he's not very vocal or active anymore, but Ariyah is still alive this day. And he's the one who came up with a lot of their doctrinal distinctives. Specifically, I'll mention two, the 12 Tribes Chart of Israel, which identifies each modern-day people group who's considered an Israelite with an ancient tribe of Israel, and something called Lashawan Kodash, which basically means the holy tongue, which is a specialized version of Hebrew that essentially drops out the known vowel pronunciation and replaces them all with the I sound, except in certain cases. And so you get Jesus being Yahweh Shai, for example. And those key distinctives, Ariyah, is the founder of. And if you look at David Anderson's social media profile, which I was actually looking at one right before the show, and I kid you not, it got taken down as I was looking at it. So I got some screenshots and images of one of his Facebook profiles, and it literally disappeared in my hands. But I got some stuff on it, and in it he uses a Lashawan Kodash name, the Wada. That's not a proper way to say David or whatever, but that's how he would say it, Lashawan Kodash. So 1969 really begins it. But it wasn't until the advent of the internet they started blowing up. And really, the past 5 years have been a real booming period for them.
Got it. All right, friends, we're going to come right back with Vocab Malone, his book, Barack Obama versus the Black Hebrew Israelites. It's got to ask him how he came up with that name. And I want to revisit one thing about Commandment Keepers and fake Jews. We'll come back to that in a moment. But much more to come. Excuse me, I may get to some calls as well. But listen, everybody. 30 minutes from now, back here on YouTube, I'm going to be doing an exclusive YouTube chat. So everybody watching now, join me in 30 minutes, 4:15 Eastern Standard. I'm going to be taking your YouTube questions. Yep, just here on Ask Dr. Brown on YouTube. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm speaking with Vocab Malone about the Black Hebrew Israelites. So glad that with his focus on urban apologetics that he's focusing on this influential group. Just looked at a comment on our Facebook feed, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook, from a woman, Deoxy, who said that she met a couple, Black Hebrew Israelite couple, that were going to every Black community in Central America to spread their message. And, you know, from my years, knowing Hebrew, their version of the Hebrew is beyond bizarre. But it is interesting, Vocab, that some of the early commandment keepers, as you call them, did work with the Jewish community, so didn't see some of them as fake Jews in that sense. There's a man named Abu Khamar. Are you familiar with him and his work here?
Abu Khamar is the greatest historian of One West Hebrew Israelism alive.
Interesting.
That's my homie right there.
All right. So you've been able to learn from him as well.
Yes, the man's memory is impeccable.
Amazing. So there's stuff that's known. In other words, this is not like 10,000 years ago trying to uncover some ancient documents. You can pretty well trace certain history, where things have gotten a foothold. What is it that is the key in your view? Obviously, different groups, right? And diversity of human beings in all of them. But what's the key in reaching those who have been deceived by this, or helping people who are now hearing it and getting pulled away from the truth?
Well, one thing real quick, I know you mentioned the Hebrew. Just again, they do not all accept Lashawan Kodash. There are a number of the groups who speak legitimate Hebrew, and a few of the guys have even become quite proficient. A few of the guys and gals have become quite proficient in legitimate modern Hebrew. That's one thing. But you're saying, why are they being pulled away? I mean, I'm
trying to... I mean, you hit on it well when you played the devil's advocate and you spoke of the anger and you spoke of the injustice and you spoke of the appeal. And yeah, it's time, you know, righteous anger and stand up. And now this is your spiritual heritage. How can we reach these people? What are the keys to reaching them and to delivering them from deception?
Well, some Hebrewites here, and this will probably say, Vocab's being the slick devil that he is, he only mentioned one aspect. The other reason we're drawn to this is because it's so clearly evidenced. So you might have someone who say, I'm not angry about anything. I just want my rightful heritage. Mm-hmm. I've looked at the facts, and it's obvious that we are the people that this book speaks of. I'm sorry if you can't handle that, but God's in control, not you. So there are people who would have that and probably want to make that caveat in there.
Yeah, appreciate
pulling
it.
Pulling people out. A big part is on the proactive side. No lone apologist or squad of apologists running around the internet, as helpful as they can be by God's grace, is going to fix this as we're in the spiritual war. It really is going to start in the churches, and that is going to take a few things, I believe. And one is there needs to be an awareness that this battle is even going on, because a lot of the churches are asleep at the wheel, especially in relationship to this fight. And I'll be honest, I encounter not only apathy, but sometimes from more mainstream churches, soft bigotry. And basically, that's the black church's problem. Not really worried about it. We do encounter some of this kind of stuff. And so it's going to take a concerted effort combining people with open ears, but also willing to fight. And what I mean by that is this. If you deal with the so-called moderate Hebrew Israelites, they generally know how to be respectful. You know, for the most part, they can be pretty cool. But the thing is, they're not all that exist out there. So if you get into this, you better have the thickest skin. And really what I mean by that is, you need to be on game when it comes to displaying the fruit of the Spirit. Not that anyone's perfect, we're not saying that. But if you don't know what it means to be patient and long-suffering and gentle and all that, yet while being, you know, like serpents and doves, that kind of thing, just like Jesus said, it's the wrong fight for you, because they are going to do everything in their power to stop you, because what they think is you're trying to stop the awakening of a people. So they view you literally as a sort of a demonic kind of person, because who else would do that but the devil? And most of them, by the way, don't hold to a literal devil. So essentially, people are personifications of the devil. The devil is sort of almost like an idea or spirit. There's not actually Satan in most of these people's demonology. And so I would be a perfect example of the devil aspect of non-Israelite peoples in their mind. So they will do, some of them will literally say and do anything. No need for a pity party right now, but I could tell you a lot of stories. And it's just a fact. So this is not going to go away. And making fun of them only, you know, sometimes I think it's okay to ridicule silly beliefs, but that's not going to fix it either. We got to do the work of understanding the Old and New Testament better. We got to do the work of addressing social justice issues. We got to do the work of recognizing the black church as something that's part of the greater church and not just this little corner tucked away. We got to recognize the significance of the African church within churches. There's a lot to do there. And sometimes it might involve recognizing certain whitewashing of Christianity. Now, they overstate the case, I believe, but it's not like that didn't happen at all, where essentially a Eurocentric view of Christianity became the picture of Christianity. And I mean, missionaries have got away from that by and large, but that was a big problem with American missionaries in prior generations. And a lot of them have recognized that. And if you study missiology, they recognize that error. You know, we don't need to tell people to wear ties to become a Christian. So there's right. A lot there. So we really are playing catch up, Dr. Brown.
And you know, when if you would have an average white American Christian see a depiction of Jesus with his disciples and they all looked black or African black, right? Your average white Christian would say, that's wrong. That's not historical. And yet they wouldn't think that if they were all white. You know, so
right.
There are presuppositions that people mm-hmm. have made. And now that error that, you know, the white European blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus, that kind of thing, and then the white man's religion, to the extent it's just unconscious in some Western Christians, then these folks are going to hit the exact opposite side. And really, the truth is in the middle. The truth is in the middle there, but the biggest thing is the spirit of it, that the physical color is not the issue. It's the life-changing power of the gospel. So real quick, and we'll have to discuss this further. Your book, Barack Obama versus the Black Hebrew Israelites, obviously it's a catchy title. What do you mean by it?
There is a movie that came out on Netflix. It was supposed to be a biopic, however you say that term, of a young Barack Obama at Columbia. And when he was at Columbia, for part of the time, he stayed in Harlem. And so they showed the actor playing young Obama walking through Harlem, specifically 125th Street, where these guys kind of originate. And he has a little debate with the Hebrew Israelite camp. When I saw that scene, I said, that's the title for a book. Barack Obama is portrayed as being an apologist against the Hebrew Israelites. So it's tongue-in-cheek. What I do is, though, I take it to use it as a platform to explain what's really going on. The book's not really about that. It's just a way to get you into that world.
Got it. No, it's a brilliant choice for a title. And bottom line, those that are caught up in this deception, they don't have a personal relationship with God. They don't know the love of God and the forgiveness of sins and the transformation of life. There's got to be some legalistic striving to be something or to do something. As you meet those that came out of this, what are they saying? I've had the pleasure of just speaking to a few folks that are former Black Hebrew Israelites. What is it that they say that they have now found in the Lord that they didn't have before?
I had one guy tell me, my eyes woke up and I realized I was a bigot. And then I realized bigotry was not biblical.
Mm.
And the guy actually said, no, I was a bigot. And the funny thing is, he said, before I was in Hebrewism, I wasn't a bigot. I realized I had become one. I had people that have been raised in this, Dr. Brown, and they just thought that was the way you read the Bible. Like, that's just normal. And then a lot of them, you see them reading the Bible on their own. That's a big thing. They read the Bible more on their own without the kind of camp leaders over their shoulder. And the Spirit a lot of times uses that. And it's like they describe it as like scales came off my eyes. It's like they were able to read the Bible. The veil had been removed, just like with the way Paul speaks of a lot of the Jews during that time in them, I think. And I've heard a lot of them say that. The other thing real quick is, even though it sometimes is messy, when Christians challenge them, and sometimes the reason I say it's messy is because sometimes you've got to be a little bit of assertive to do it, or at least clever. It's very tricky. And I'm talking about even on the street. I had a guy say, a Christian came up, he was challenging us. I knew how to use the camp dynamic to shut him down verbally, but the stuff he said stuck in my head to the point where a year later I couldn't stop thinking of it, and that's what led me to this year-long trail of getting out of it, and now he's a wonderful young apologist himself. So never ever say, no one's going to reach those people or all that. That's man talking. That's what we think. That's why Jesus says, hey, all things are possible with God. Why do we think that way? Oh, no, we don't know. So go in there in the spirit and power of the Lord and see what's going to happen, and we're going to see more and more people come out of this. I'm working on an interview right now with a person who is the son of the offspring, I'll put it that way, the offspring of one of these camps themselves, grew up in the household of one of the leaders of one of these organizations. So it's happening. So we can't give up and realize the weapons of our warfare are not carnal.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, those are people for whom Jesus died, for whom Yeshua died, just like anybody else. 48 years ago, when God's grace prevailed in my life and I said, I'll never put a needle in my arm again, the guy you were looking at there, long-haired hippie rock drummer, if you said he'd be a leading apologist reaching Jewish people with the gospel, yeah, right. So who knows God's plans for these that seem angry or hateful or just deceived and lost. So let's keep reaching out. Let's keep praying. And you never know what difference your prayers are going to make. Vocab, keep up the great work. Where's the best place for folks to connect with you online?
YouTube. I'm going live tonight. I'm very active. YouTube.com/VocabMalone. And I just dropped a video on David Wood's channel, Act 17 Apologetics, explaining the 5 reasons for the shooting.
All right. God bless. Follow Vocab Malone on YouTube.